Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience with Darren and Mark and a special guest.
Welcome to the Fan Experience Experience podcast series. Each podcast will explore a different element of the fan experience and fan engagement. Some will look at the matchday experience, while others will explore broader themes. But every podcast will deliver value to anyone listening in football or indeed any other spectator sport. So whether it's general advice you need or ways to help you start a conversation with your own colleagues, we reckon a regular dose of the fan experience will make a difference for you. So join me, Mark.
And me, Darren, as we explore ways of improving the experience on match days, making clubs more sustainable and relying less on winning to keep fans engaged.
And of course, if you want to find out more about what we do, you can check out our newly launched website at www.fanexperienceco.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at fanexperienceco and Instagram at fanexperience.co. There's enough to complicate things at the start, but we'll make it simple. We tend to talk about two subjects when we have these podcasts. We all switch our phones off as well. We talk about different elements of the matchday experience, and we also talk about more broader themes, as we've said. And today we're kind of combining the two. Our guests are Michael and Chris from the Scottish Marketing Football Podcast. Before we talk to them, Darren and I just wanted to focus on today's theme, which is outside the stadium. Now, of course, for many clubs, outside the stadium is something they can't pay a lot of attention to because perhaps like Notts County, for example, there's very little space. And it's all about safety and getting people inside the ground and doing things there. For lots of clubs, it is possible to do a lot. But the clubs that we work with tend to be outside of the elite and have restrictions either in terms of resources, space, or otherwise. So from your perspective, Darren, what are we talking about when we say outside of the stadium?
Well, I guess, you know, as I think you've already mentioned, we see a huge range in all the assessments we do because simply there's such a variety of space and resources available to clubs. So I think it's very much what you can do if you can do it. And I know that in a lot of our assessments, we have to allow for the fact that some clubs just, as you mentioned earlier, just simply don't have the space. But if you have got the space, I think we're talking about what you can do to really take that experience beyond the 90 minutes. And, you know, the obvious things are fan zones, which I guess many clubs will have sort of had or at least experimented with. But it doesn't have to be that big. It can be just some extra refreshment stands. It can be a small area where children can meet and perhaps have some inflatables set up. So there's all sorts of things I can do.
And very basically, I guess, there's just evidence that there's actually a game going on. So when we're doing our assessments down through the English Football League system or in the women's game, that's something that, you know, initially we found was a problem that, you know, you may be in a stadium that isn't yours. You may be in a part of town that people aren't familiar with. But the most important thing at that stage is to have something which indicates that there's something happening.
Yeah. Sometimes you can actually go to within 50 yards of the ground, not see anything. That actually even says that there's a stadium there, so that's an interesting one. But just on that point, Mark, of where you said making sure people know there's a game on, I have got a little story that's a little different to that, in that I probably one of the best examples I've seen of the outside of a stadium was at NAC Breda in the Netherlands, and I went there for a midday kickoff a couple of years ago, one of our assessments. You might remember, I think you were within the country with me at the time.
I was at Pex Volla watching your game on the TV and trying to figure out whether or not Sunderland would beat Portsmouth in the Checker Trade final.
Well, I got there just before 10 o'clock and there was huge amount of food, drink. There was a bar, there was live music. There was so many inflatables. It was incredible, probably about a dozen. There was games going on. There was kids shooting into goals. All this was on one side of the stadium and not even the long side. It was behind one of the goals. It was just absolutely amazing. And I remember it was almost the opposite of what you've just described. In this, at about 11:30, I suddenly thought, hang on, what am I actually here for? And I actually had to remember that there was a game on and I still had to go do the assessment because I was enjoying myself that much. But the footnote to that, which I looked at later, was that was an amazing experience, which I think lots of teams can perhaps learn from the point of this, even if they don't do it to quite the same level. Nat Breda didn't hardly win a game that season. They finished rock bottom of the table, but their attendance has barely changed throughout that season. So people were clearly enjoying going to the stadium, even if they weren't enjoying what was happening on the pitch.
So let's move from the continental excitement of attending a match in Breda to north of the border. Chris, Michael, it's great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having us on, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
You kindly invited me to speak on your podcast a couple of years ago. You probably wished you hadn't, because I went on so much about fan experience. But you guys have been doing this for a long time. You've been sharing, obviously, Michael, you're at the Scottish FA, and Chris working in marketing, and both loving Scottish football. And that passion comes across in your podcasts. I think the recent one that I've just looked at is Raith Rovers, which our producer was at quite recently. So you know how much we love Scottish football. You know that we've worked up there for several seasons now. And, you know, we love it. And I guess the phrase that we tend to... Well, I think for me, the phrase that comes to mind more than anything else, especially when you get outside of the top tier, is hiding your light under a bushel. You know, that we know on the one hand that per capita, Scotland has once again topped the table of all European countries. That's right, isn't it? That more people per capita watch Scottish football than in any other country in Europe. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And I think I was looking at the top division, but what you see throughout the whole of Scottish football is that there's a very healthy appetite to be going to games, which is great to see. I think a lot people, and Chris will probably echo this, is that it's easy to knock Scottish football. It's easy to put it down, but there is so many people within the country that just are passionate for it and mad for it, and really do try their best to talk the game up, and there's so much great going for it.
Yeah, I think the lower you go down, that sometimes even strengthens it further. Yeah. I think there's a bit of a league shuffle around, and some of the junior clubs from the West region are actually moving into the pyramid system, officially starting when the season starts again. And a lot of those clubs are actually better supported at times and better attended than some of the actual league clubs that we've got at the moment. So that's only going to get even more passionate, and that'll even strengthen it further as we go forward, as some of those clubs make their way up the pyramid.
Yeah, because I think down below the border, we have little sense or understanding of what you mean by junior football up there, because it's thriving, isn't it?
Totally, yeah, and especially so for a good few clubs in the West. I think there's some of those clubs are making some kind of ambitious signings this summer as well. But you've got a club like Auchinleck Talbot, who are from kind of Ayrshire region, and they are probably the most successful junior club, shall we say. They've made that move up, and yeah, that their off-field performance and probably on-field performance is probably just going to get even better as the seasons go on, now that they've made that move.
And I think of when we've looked at the performance of, you know, Cove Rangers and even Edinburgh City before them, you know, it's clear that, you know, in terms of the quality of the football on the pitch and that kind of conveyor belt of young talent, and we only have to mention, you know, a certain player who played for Queen's Park, who's lifted the Champions League and won the Premier League in the last couple of seasons to show what's possible there. You talk about the, you know, the passion and the support, and it's clear that Scottish football up there is loved. And, you know, our experience last season was undertaking assessments across League One. And of course, in League One, you have two clubs that would probably prefer to be at a high level, Falkirk and Raith, but also some small clubs, Montrose, who've been really punching above their weight for a long time now. So a real diversity of clubs there. And while each club is different, each club, you know, would like to have more fans for different reasons, there's a real variety, a real diversity of what different clubs are doing. You know, Raith Rovers, as our producer will recall, were the ones in that division who were, and you know, you've covered this in your latest podcast, who really really taken hold of all the different marketing channels, in particular social media, to try and convey what the club means, to try and get people to come, not just for the football and reaching out. But then you get to a club like Montrose, with Davy Byrne, who we know very well, and Davey's going to be a guest very soon on the podcast, has a different challenge. There's only two full-time people at that club during the week, and both of them are probably furloughed at the moment. So when we look at, you know, that the the concept of a fan experience and the idea of marketing, as we know it at other levels of football, what's it like for them? And, you know, and if you're advising them, what do you say to them?
I think it's tough, because when we're doing the podcast, we have to be very wary that, as you said, these clubs are, most for the most part, are reliant on volunteers. The resource, and what a lot of the time it's about, can they get a game on at the weekend? And whereas when we talk about things like outside the stadium, or but more of the fan experience, or even things like email marketing, or anything that looks, goes above and beyond just the game of football, I think for a lot of clubs, and understandably so, within the lower regions of Scottish football, is a kind of nice to do rather than a must do. And there's a core crowd that will always go to these games, and it's a good chance that they're always going to be interested. But what we try to get across to clubs is there's an audience there that has not been spoken to, or have not shown probably as much interest as the club would like to come and visit the ground or go to a game. And it's how do you do that, but also find the time to do that. And I think that's the big thing for clubs. And I'm sure that it's the same across within England, and I know within Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, because through the podcast we've managed to speak to a few people. And yeah, it's about not being patronising, I suppose, what me and Chris have to be wary of, and understanding the constraints that these clubs have, but show them that there is quick wins to be had. There is longer term wins to be had as well, but it does take a little bit of refocusing on some of the activities.
How much of it's financial, Michael, and how much of it's like that lack of perhaps awareness that it's something that they need to be doing to attract that new type of audience?
I think finance is a big part of it. I think we can't get away from that. As I said, these clubs, for the most part, in fact, the vast, vast majority of them are run by volunteers. Mark, you referenced the Raith Rovers podcast we've done recently, and Neil on that podcast was talking about, now Raith Rovers are, in essence, a full-time club, but have over 80 volunteers. That help that club run. So finance is a big aspect. The clubs are, and I think we're seeing it a lot within this period with COVID, that the fundraising efforts that clubs are having to go to just keep going. And up in Scotland, it's been phenomenal, actually, just to see fans get behind the club, their clubs, and put the money into it. And for a lot of the time, not even getting anything back, it's just putting money in. But yeah, I think there is and it's hard to say this without hopefully not offending too many people, but it is shifting that focus a little bit, and realizing that what you're needing to do is, as I said before, your core crowd's always going to be there, but you're not doing it for them. You need them to do it to attract more of your local community, to make them feel welcome in an environment that may be home to you. And then this is the thing about volunteers and your core fans and your committees, etc., is that you're very much used to going to these grounds and being part of going to the games and knowing the whole environment. But it's a whole new world to those that don't go to the game. And whether you recognise it or not, it can be intimidating going to the football, even if you are a local club or a small ground. People are always wary of the unknown, scared to make a fool of themselves. A lot of the time it's easier not to go than go. So I think clubs sometimes, and we're guilty of that, no matter what level you're at, is you get too caught up in what it is you're part of, and you don't take that step back to realise what it's like for somebody that's not familiar with what you do.
And that's very much what we find, you know, that we find that the attractions of clubs outside of the elite, and we're not talking Championship in England, but further down, so down through the lower leagues, non-league, and to grassroots, is that they have benefits that fans of higher league clubs actually miss. You know, being able to park for free, being able to have a beer in a social club, you know, which you can do in the likes of Dumbarton and and East Fife, you know, that that you can't do at a higher level. That you can, you know, your kids can run around, the space to run around, the space to meet people. You can become familiar with the players. You can get very close to the action. And you're right. It's not, you know, we're not. I don't think we're being, you know, desultory or critical here. We're just saying that the focus of trying to keep a club running, especially a part-time club with volunteers, often means that, you know, psychologically you're so focused on keeping the ship actually above water that you miss some of these things. And I think Montrose, and Darren and I have been talking about, you know, what's good practice in an area like stadium vicinity. And for Davion Montrose, it's the fact that, say, there's a tourist office, which is quite prominent in the main road in Montrose as you come in. And, you know, we discovered that the tourist office, you know, couldn't answer any basic questions about where the club was or when the game was on. You know, so that was one thing that we could do, is just make sure that if there's tourism, and of course there is at Montrose, there's a nice golf course here, it's in a beautiful part of the world, just for people who may be dropping by to actually know there's something going on. And another thing that they've done very, very well at Montrose is to use a very clear font. So a basic thing in marketing, but something which football clubs have missed over the years, which is to have every sign the same font, the same style, the same size, the same colour. You'll know that, you know, in the past you'll go to a stadium and it's almost like the rings on a tree. When you age a tree, you can tell that there are signs going back to about 1910. Most of whom's theme is don't do this, stop doing that, and don't look at me that way, you know. And it's, that was something that very little work was involved, but it's very significant in actually reassuring you when you turn up that you're welcome, that there's something going on here, and that they're interested in more than just the locals coming. Darren, you'd back that up, wouldn't you, from your trips at non-league, low league level?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the time, you know, we hear a very familiar thing that seems to come out from particularly non-league clubs that say, oh, we've got this huge community, and either none of them know we're here, or sometimes none of them even like us. And I think part of that is not understanding that sort of that relationship that you can have with those people. And actually, if you try and bring them into it and make them part of it, then actually there could be a completely different relationship that could mean that some of the things you do outside the stadium attract people who maybe wouldn't have even thought of coming to football games before. Because I was going to ask you, Chris, I mean, given where we are with the COVID situation and the fact that clubs have lost lots of income in the last few months, I mean, surely now more than ever, there need to be marketing to that group that perhaps have been missing out up until now.
Yeah, completely. You would really like to think so. You'd really like to think that's high up on the agendas at a lot of clubs at the moment. I think it's been mentioned already, but obviously a lot of our clubs up here have staff that are on furlough. I know in a lot of cases, I think the majority of the staff, it's maybe just some of the directors that aren't on furlough at the moment, and that's maybe not their priority. The priority is probably survival for them at the moment. But for me, the marketing of the club comes under survival, because like you said, Darren, that's got to be the thing that gets focused on going forward. I think it's going to be so important. And there is some clubs that I've seen in particular that have been focusing on that while we've been kind of without football on the pitch up here. I think we had Nathan Thompson, who's now a director at Berwick Rangers on the club, and for me, that the transformation that club's gone under, even just over the last few years off the pitch, they've had a pretty wretched time of it. They got relegated from the SPFL down into the Lowland League, and they've been in the Lowland League a couple of seasons now, and they basically at some point this season decided to hit the reset button and put a huge focus behind just transforming that club off the pitch. And I'm actually looking forward to when football comes back now, because I'm excited to see what the changes they made off the pitch, how that impacts things on the pitch, how that impacts things in the stands. And it'll be really interesting to see that, because, like I said, they've put a big focus on kind of almost professionalising every aspect of the club while we've been kind of without football. And I think that's something that a lot of clubs could take inspiration from.
I would definitely encourage people, if they can't, to see that. I think it was that the episode of View from the Terrace that has all of those films, that doesn't have the guy sat in the studio, but was broadcast about a month ago. And there's a feature on Berwick there. And myself and the producer were sat watching this, and we were there in 2013, 2014. But even then, even though it's windswept, there's very little shelter. It can be very cold there. The games can be very windy. That can be a challenge for people playing there. The thing we remember is how welcoming the social club was. Still remember playing pool there. You know, still remember how welcoming it was. And, you know, speaking to one of the directors there. And that's something that sometimes I think it takes a third person or, a stranger to turn up and actually see what they've got. I remember, I won't mention the club, but there is a club in League One that the producer went to visit to undertake an assessment for. And there was a key part of the pre-match experience that he nearly didn't find because of a lack of signage. You know, and that's not something that's, beyond the realm, either in terms of imagination, resources, or otherwise. You know, so it can be sometimes something as simple as that. I always remember that that Millwall, who we were delighted when in 2014, I believe, were actually the winners of the Family Club of the Year. And as you can imagine, that got attention, when we normally don't get the attention of the press. But one of the things Millwall do incredibly well is that all of their branding and signs is in that navy blue and white that people think of when they think of the club. It's there everywhere. And on the front of the stadium, there's one of those signs when there's six or seven bits of information on top of each other. But there's one with a kind of beautiful multicoloured font, same font, but multicoloured, which is actually Zampa's family room. So if you're taking kids to your first game, there's a lot of focus on that down there in Southeast London. That's the thing you see as you look at that sign. So you're absolutely no doubt whatsoever where you need to go. And there are more signs as you go around. And I think that's something that, Darren, you'd certainly agree with that. Yeah, I mean,
I know it's. I didn't want to sort of put a negative against the example you've just given, because there was also an example of a League One club who had to close their fan zone because no one knew it was there. That's almost the exact opposite to what you described there, where actually they'd gone through the effort and the financial demands of putting a fan zone in place and then just didn't tell people where it was. So subsequently 75% of fans never got there and never saw it, which felt a real shame.
And I guess that brings us back to the value of the volunteers, because you mentioned before that Wraith have 80 volunteers that are helping them at the moment. And that's actually having volunteers that are out there that walk up to you if they don't recognise you, they strike up a conversation with you. Some of the greatest moments we've had in Scottish football have been as a result of chatting to someone before the game. I mean, the Red Lichtys know us very well because we've been... our Broth advocates ever since the producer and I went to a game in 2013, just after the producer's 18th birthday. And as a result of a little old man engaging us outside the stadium, we got a personal tour. We were mentioned by the match announcer. We were told to make sure we got on the queue for a steak and black pudding pie before it sold out. And, up in the bar, the producer was given a free pint for his 18th birthday. A bit of Belhaven, and I still have the picture of him. And they are the things we remember. I know I had to look up to discover that the game ended 2-2 with a couple of sendings off. We'd forgotten that. It was just that. And I guess that kind of brings us round to the start, that Scottish football is beloved. It's pure. It's absolutely loved by the people that follow it. But in adopting some of these marketing measures and adopting some of these fan experience measures, it can tap into that wider community. And I think we'd all agree with that. Michael, does that kind of chime with the way the SFA would see these things?
Yeah, no, definitely. Community is at the heart of a lot. And I know you've spoke about this on your podcast before, but for a lot of clubs, it's actually understanding what they stand for. What's their identity? What role do they want to play within the community? And it's interesting, Darren, you mentioned a fan zone that nobody knew about. And that's probably a thing that, again, we're all guilty of, but it's a communication beforehand as well, not just when people turn up, and signage is important, and the people might be listening to this going a bit hypocritical, and people in glass houses considering Hampden's not always the best, and that's something that we're very much aware of, that that we need to address and are trying to work on as well. But it's that communication beforehand, in the week before, or even before that, and hence why I referenced email marketing or Twitter and social, Facebook and whatever else it is communicating and knowing what to expect when you go there and speaking to that local community. And it's actually also understanding about what do your fans want, but what's your local community telling you? Chris referenced Nathan being on the podcast for Bennett Grangers and talking about the transformation that they've been going through, and Raith Rovers were the same because they do their annual survey, and a lot of clubs do, but that's a survey in fans. But what is it in the local community want as well? Because the more people that experience it, like yourself, Mark, will no doubt love it as well.
Yeah, it's true that we've mentioned, I'm sure we've mentioned on one of these podcasts, a club in the National League in England, so in the fifth tier in England, who were participated in a civic survey, which really gave them some clues as to what they were doing wrong and what they needed to do right in terms of the way that they were perceived. Guys, we're coming towards the end. It just shows you how quick these podcasts pass when we're having such a good time. And unfortunately, it is the time to bring this podcast to an end, but not before I say it's
time for the roundup.
And on the roundup this time, we were happy to see that fans, at least some fans, were allowed into the Pokalfinal, the Danish Cup final, which took place this week between Sønderjyske from Haderslev in the south and Aalborg in the north of Jutland. The result, a 2-0 win for Sønderjyske, the first time they've ever won the cup. Both goals were scored, as it always is the case, by a former Aalborg player. What was significant about the game was that we had 1,500 fans there in Esbjerg Stadium down in southwest Jutland. And this is significant because it is known now that in Danish Superliga playoff matches, we're going to see probably 75 to 80% of attendances allowed, subject to some social distances and other restrictions. We do know that there were some difficulties at the cup final, but only small ones, and for me, that really gives us an encouraging sign that football with fans, the way it should be, will be back soon. So I'd like to thank Michael, I'd like to thank Chris, obviously Darren too, and our producer, and you most of all for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Fan Experience Experience podcast.
And don't forget to check out our new website at fanexperienceco.com. The Fan Experience Experience was recorded live. See you next time.